Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
And I'm Erica Thomas, and this month we are welcoming Takahiro Yamamoto. Welcome, Taka.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for being here. So let's start off with just having you say, in your own words, if you can tell our audience a little more about who you are and what you do as an artist.
I am a multidisciplinary artist and a choreographer. I mainly make live performance works, but all the other works, sculpture, photography, writing, what other stuff do I do? All the other visual artworks, always in relationship to the live performance that I make. The way I think, the way I create always revolve around performance. And liveness is something that I often treasure. I enjoy doing it in live.
And so can you tell us a little bit about how you became an artist? Do you feel like you were always an artist when you were growing up as a young person? Or is that something that evolved for you over time?
No, I mean, when I was growing up, all I was doing was studying and play volleyball. I did not do any arts until I moved to the States. I moved to the States after high school. I ran into theater right after I moved here, and when I was 18, 19, that was an accident, but I just fell into it. And through that theater, I dabbled so many different kinds of theater and then ended up in dance and movement-based work. And when I was 29, 30, so that's when I started dancing. Artistically, I didn't have any training until I went to graduate school. To answer your question, no. Is that the question? What was the other question?
How it is that you came to call yourself an artist, basically. Yeah, we like to ask our guests about their youth. You know, what was it like for you when you were a young person?
Again, I was studying like crazy. And I was playing volleyball for 6 years. I was in the competitive swimming for a few years. I basically had no life when I was in high school. I didn't even travel so much. So that's all I was doing. I guess I was obsessed with American culture in Japan. I got to do this sister city program. So I was in the US when I was 16 for 2 weeks. So that kind of prompted me into wanting to learn something other than the culture that I was living in. So I was obsessed with all the TV shows in the 90s, American TV shows that's dubbed in Japanese. I was watching all those. I think I was also obsessed with Sister Act back then. So I was watching Sister Act quite often. So that was my teen years.
Amazing. Nicole, do you know Sister Act, that movie?
No.
My God.
I know, Nicole. I was like, I think she might not know what that means. It's like this kind of comedy movie, like Whoopi Goldberg is in it, and is pretending to be a nun for some reason. I can't remember why.
She witnessed a murder or something.
Right.
So
yeah.
She was hiding. But Lizzo recently did a homage to Sister Act in one of those awards show, and I was like,
Yeah, it was a big, like, I don't know, I think anyone who's was alive in the 80s, I guess, probably remembers that show or that movie.
That was amazing. Yes.
So you moved to, so you came to the U.S. when you were 16 for this 2-week visit. Where were you?
I was in Eugene, Oregon.
Okay, there we go.
I know, yeah, it's such a look. Yeah, because Eugene and my city in Japan was sister cities, yeah.
I see, okay. And so that's how you ended up being curious about moving to Oregon. So you chose to move to Oregon.
I actually landed in Orange County, California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was in Los Angeles for 11 years before I moved to Portland for graduate school in 2011. Mm-hmm. So all my acting, all my musical theater, all the theater stuff that I did was in California. But so my friends in California knew me as an actor, but my friends in Portland know me as a dance person. It's a funny thing. Yeah.
Nicole, do you have?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask a bit more about your time in Japan. I know you said, you know, you practically had no life and you were in your studies and I feel like that's what I hear a lot, you know, like that's the culture of students and also people in their work lives, like once they become adults. But I'm curious, I know you said, again, dug into your work, but what was the art scene in Japan that you remember of? Maybe you didn't get to see it and look at it personally, but is there anything from your youth that you remember about art in Japan? Or, you know, like you said, is it strictly all American sort of influence that you got?
Oh, good question. What do I remember? Another thing is that I was away from city centers. I was in the farmland growing up. So that's why my exposure to arts are very minimal. There are some painting. Was I doing some paintings for class? I remember this, you know how like performance people do a school visit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember them coming through and I remember making fun of them. I remember that's exactly what I do. I don't want to do, and then I'm doing them now, but I remember arts. I remember doing I remember doing some like we have to make a poster for like, you know how like there's a sign that says slow down, this is the, slow down sign.
Yeah.
So there's like a school initiative that like asking students to make some poster that says, oh, recycling is good, or like that kind of like poster making. So I used to make that.
No, that's your experience. It's what you lived.
It's funny, like, who knew Taco was a jock that was like laughing at the artist?
Oh my god.
But yeah, so it's rural, you know. I mean, it's similarly, I feel, in a lot of countries, you know, a lot of places around the world, it's like if you grow up rurally, just your access to like certain kinds of culture, there's culture rurally, it's just like, but it's that access to like the fine arts is lower, is like just less access. So
definitely, yeah.
And so you decided to move to LA when you finished high school.
I was actually on the track to go to universities in Tokyo. I think majoring in English literature or something like that. I think I decided not to go to that route because I wanted, I wanted to become a newscaster back then.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I want to study journalism and TV broadcasting in English rather than going to university and study English.
Yeah.
That was my half excuse to move to the States.
Whatever you need.
Exactly. Yes. That's why I decided to come to the States. So I couldn't, my English wasn't that great when I moved here. So I went to English school for 6 months and really getting a test score high so that I can go to colleges, community college, I think I went.
And so you studied journalism at school?
I did. I was a communication studies, TV, radio. I did a radio broadcasting and journalism. Mm-hmm. But I did take one journalism class and I was like, I can't do this. You know, like you wanted something, but when you do it, it's not really what you wanted it.
Yeah.
And that's when I also, about the same time that I started doing theater, I was in the musical theater a lot because I couldn't speak English. And it turns out that when you sing, your accent doesn't come out.
Yeah.
So that was my way of bypassing English barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but theater was great. Yeah, that's a funny story. Yeah, my first production was Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah, but I didn't know anything about Christianity, so I had to really study it. Like, I went to church a few times and asking a bunch of questions about, like, why are they eating bread? What's this grapefruit, grape juice, and that kind of stuff. I was asking a bunch of questions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Haven't thought about that for a while. Thank you for that question.
I'm curious. I know you said you started in Orange County, and you had visited Eugene previously, but ultimately, what was your reason to come back to Portland after 11 years of being in California?
It was a graduate school. I went to PNCA, Pacific Northwest College of Art. At that time, I was interested in making performances, movement-based performances, but I didn't want to go to dance grad school or theater. I wanted to look at performance in a visual art lens, because that's the field that I felt like it's open enough for me to do whatever I want without having a baggage of what the medium is supposed to be. So visual arts realm seems to be more open to welcome me. And I was interested in that history of it. And I was also interested in placing myself in that canon. So I applied for a bunch of grad school and I got into a few, but I chose Portland, not because of the Eugene. I mean, Eugene is kind of big because I'm still in touch with that host family. They're very dear to me. But I was attracted to PNCA because it was a younger program and it was an interdisciplinary program and also small program enough so that I knew that I won't have too much hurdle to what I'm about to do. Because if I'm in the established school, I knew that I will have a bigger, because performance, looking at performance in the visual art isn't that easy, I knew. So, and PNCA was exactly that. So I got, and I was also challenging myself and say, what if I move to a different city where I have no community, and what does it mean to build brand new community at the age of 30? So that was a challenge to myself too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, I find that really interesting that you mentioned, like, the fact that you chose the school because you didn't want to feel, or you didn't want to have to fight through sort of, like, the challenges of a bigger school. Because I feel like I also relate to that, Because I'm at Portland Community College, so I'm not, like, at some, like, you know, big film school or something like that. And I could have done that. But ultimately, like, you know, I have roots here. And like, I have people I know here. So I would rather just kind of stick to something smaller and sort of build my way through that. And I've spoken with Erica as well. Like, you know, I'm not into the idea of doing... you know, all this schoolwork, and I'd rather network and build community and get jobs and work with people that way, you know? And so I feel that sort of aspect of what you say. And yeah, just wanted to say that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's a good segue into sort of Taka, how do you get opportunities for yourself as an artist? What does that look like for you?
Right now or before?
Well, I guess maybe the comparison would be useful also, you know, because ideally we have a youth audience that's like trying to figure out for themselves how they're going to do it. How am I going to be an artist? So like, I hope each of these interviews that we have shows some slight difference in how to make it work. How did that evolve for you from when you were a younger artist, like maybe around the time you went to grad school to now?
You know, I think it's the way that's happening is making good friends is a big part of it, I have to say. The community too, building good community, community building basically means making good friends for me.
Yeah.
having a good friends and having people that you respect, I respect, and I'm also identifying who I respect in terms of their personhood or their artistic practice. And I think I get opportunities because my friends very generous enough to respect me and what I do, and I also respect them. So it's like it's a reciprocal relationship. And I also maybe because I don't have a lot of patience in this, I'm not good at waiting, but I do like to move, not limit myself to only the city. I go to different cities and also become friends with different, you know, bunch of people in different cities too, so that my network can be in different cities as well, but while maintaining this community at the same time. I don't really choose either or. I think that's how I'm getting, that's how I like to make work. I also, when I invite people into my projects, I always start with a coffee dates and tea dates and get to know them, and if they are even interested in the work and interested in even the process that I'm inviting them to. Because if they are not interested, then it's going to be a torture.
Yeah.
So I try to avoid that. Yeah. Don't you think? What do you think, Erica?
I often give this similar advice, I guess, or maybe advice is like a little strong, but it's like I give examples of how I do what I do. I mean, your process is relational, highly relational. Like even your photographs, even your sculpture work and installation work, it's like it always feels relational. And that's a way that I think is core to the way that I want to work, is that the work itself builds relationships. The process of making stuff together is brings people together. So it's been absolutely true for me also that friendship really is what it is. I mean, you can call people colleagues or whatever, but it's like just fancy words for friends. My friends and I, you know, get opportunities and share them, or invite each other to collaborate on projects, you know, curate each other into shows and buy work. You know, yesterday I was at Paseo all day, and it's like the people who bought stuff from me were a lot of people I know. So your friends will buy your art, or they will come to your show or whatever it is that you're doing. So I agree. Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I think also the underlining part of it is the curiosity. Like making friends and becoming creating a relationship for me is I'm curious about this person, and I'm curious about what they think. I'm curious about what kind of vision they have. So curiosity towards each other and the other people seems to be, I don't know. I'm afraid that as I get old, I might lose it, but I'm trying to keep up with that.
I mean, there's always like, I feel an artistic chemistry with certain people, you know, like that make you want to keep doing it. And it's like, you know, you have like romantic relationships have that kind of chemistry and like friendships have that kind, but there's a really specific different kind for me of like artistic chemistry that happens, like where the conversation just like keeps producing more and more newer and interesting ideas. And it's like, that's how I know. It's like, you get this kind of like momentum and like, it's a really amazing feeling when you find that.
Definitely. And even if you don't have a chemistry with another person, that doesn't mean that that person is bad. I'm still curious about what that person is going to do. You know, I don't, just because the artistic route doesn't merge, that doesn't mean that the other art is not, you know. I won't dismiss it. I just, I'm, you know. But you're right, the chemistry thing is quite magical. I do like that.
Yeah, and sometimes like that just means that that person is someone I talk my work through with, you know. Like it may be that we do a project together, or it may be that we do tea dates and we just talk about, and it helps me think through the work more. Through somebody's eyes whose practice I respect and think is interesting. Nicole, we just wandered off into space. Do you have questions that you want to know? It's great. This is great.
I feel like we haven't had like a visual artist like you, you know, where like you work with like movement and stuff like that. And so it's different from most of the stuff that we looked at and how people get funding. And so I'm curious, with the type of work that you do, how do you get funding? Because I think for, you know, like you said, you used to make fun of people like that. How is your work able to get funding? Or do you feel it's like the same as like somebody else who just makes paintings?
In Portland, there are some fundings that encompass both performing arts and visual arts. RAC funding is one of them. Oregon Arts Commission is another one. The one that I recently received for the piece at the museum was Oregon Community Foundation. I didn't know about that grant until the curator at the museum suggested it. So that was one funding I received. There are some national fundings for performing artists so you can kind of tap into that as well. The funding, I guess that's kind of how, also, you know, like when you are teaching at a university, which I do occasionally, I do get some professional development fund from the school, and those are great because that's how I'm getting out of here. I cover my flights and lodging so that I can be in different city and do some training or do some workshops and getting to learn more about other community of people. That's also a funding that I'm really grateful to have. But there are a lot of stuff that I do for free at the bar in Portland, and that doesn't cost anything. But we organize, we have at the bar or like small gallery space or on the street so those actually are great because you can invite as many people as possible they want, and they just grab a drink and watch performance, and I get to talk to them afterwards in a very most casual way. afterwards. So I also get to know who came to see my performance and what they actually do. So it's not just about the performance we talk about, we also get to know each other. So getting to know the audience member and viewers through that type of environment has been so fruitful, because where else would I meet these people? You know, it's great. Yeah.
So is that, other than like relationships from previous works and communities, is that how you get people that to kind of work for you or work with you in these projects and kind of like your most recent one? Or are there also other ways of like, oh, I need dancers for this, or like, you know, how do you source people for your performances?
The most recent one, the museum piece, I invited 8 people into it, and there are 9 performers, including myself. All these people I already have already had existing relationship with, but I've never worked with them before extensively like this. I chose specifically for these people because I was interested in who I want to have a conversation with. The main concept of the work is visibility and invisibility on the social, political, and personal level, and also physical level too. So that concept, visibility, invisibility, I was just curious about what they're gonna say, each person is gonna say. So I didn't choose them most of them are not dancers in the work. But I wasn't really paying attention to that part. I was more interested in who I wanna have a conversation. And then who are interested in or curious enough to jump into performing. Because if people don't like to perform, then I'm not gonna force them either. So there has to be there. Are they interested in me because I'm interested in you? So that if that matches, and that's how I chose those people. And yes, those people I know through the community because I go to see a bunch of shows and I've seen their work. I've talked to them occasionally at the, you know, after the show or at the opening of the visual arts show. Well, one of them actually was my TA at PSU, Erica. Do you know Nolan? Nolan Hansen was a social practice grad.
Oh, yeah, I know Nolan. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Nolan was my TA for the class that I was teaching at PSU. Mm-hmm. And they were great. Great at TAing. We get along in terms of teaching, but also we talked so much outside of the class. So that's how I get to know them, and I wanted to have further conversation with them. So that's how I chose them.
So it's kind of the other way around. Like, you're sometimes the audience member for their work, and that's how you get curious about wanting to do work with them.
It's true. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Who do you think of as your audience or audiences? Like, is the audience for the museum the opacity of performance piece that you recently, you know, this piece we're talking about, was that audience at the museum a different kind of audience than the audience that you might have at, say, like a smaller community space or a bar or something like that? Or do you think there's a lot of crossover? Mm-hmm. Who are the people watching the work?
The museum piece, there are a few different kinds of audiences. The one that I was focusing on is each performer's their own community and their friends. And I was interested in, because those people are coming from all these different kinds of communities, and they didn't really know each other before this project started it. So I was curious about how to have those random people from the random field in one room and experiencing the same work. So that I was interested in that commingling of that. And that was the primary audience that I was thinking about. And then I was also interested in museum goers who go to museum to see paintings and drawings and sculptures where the artwork don't speak, look back at them.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they gonna deal with a human body as part of the artistic expression? So those accidental audiences also were there. So some people came to museum to see the show. Some people happens to be at the museum to see the show. So there are different type of audiences who came to see the show. But my focus was my performers, their own community, is what I was interested in.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's also different from, I'm doing another piece at PICA this year in September, and that'll be a very different audience because it'll be a very theatrical space too. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there won't be accidental audience for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting right. how each piece has its own different, yeah, audience members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about that kind of, I think about audience a lot, like who are we making the project for? Who's the work for? And yeah, I love a project or a piece that considers like a conversation of some sort, you know, it may be like not literal dialogue, but you know, the kind of like the energetic kind of conversation happening between the performer and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I wanted to know, when creating a piece, maybe in regards to your most recent one, what is the process of just creating those first movements to sort of translate what you're trying to say with that piece?
The first step is a lot of talking. I talk with them so much, and I have a bunch of questions that I ask them, and I take so much notes. Like I get to know how they're thinking and what they're thinking. I also observe, I mean, I'm only talking about this specific work, but I was observing how they're moving around and what kind of, if they like to sit on the ground, people don't like to sit on the ground, how they walk, are they slouchy, are they, you know, they like to run, or like, you know, are they busy with their body gestures? And so I kind of observe all that. And I often work, this is kind of my go-to, but I often think about if this person's comfortable doing this kind of movement, or if this person's not comfortable doing this kind of move. So I was interested in discomfort and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I made them do both. Mm-hmm. And doing this uncomfortable movements, or like if one dancer is not really, they're so tall that they don't really have a relationship with the ground or something, then great, and then I'm not interested in mastering those movements. I'm interested in their experience of uncomfortable experience. And that in itself is a very beautiful quality already. So I let them suffer, I guess. work through that. And then, I mean, the more you do it, sometimes if I do it too much, then those performers get so used to it and getting so good at it. So I have to keep finding something that's uncomfortable to them. Because if they master it, then it doesn't give me the experience that I want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how, with this work, I started it. I mean, some people actually, yeah. Some people, that also emerged in the middle of it. Some people I can identify right away. Yeah, thank you for that question. That's interesting.
No, it was interesting to hear sort of your process. And I think it kind of makes a little more sense to me now. And I also want to hear what your thought is on sort of like your work and performance versus, you know, traditional dance. Because like you said, you didn't want to do that. You didn't want to have the limitations of that. And by accident, I wore my dance shirt today. Because I used to dance in high school. Similar to you, I didn't have much experience until that point in my life. And I'm not trained classically. And so I have my own thoughts on that. But I'm curious, what is your thought on, like, what is dance to you compared to the work that you do?
You know, I respect all these dancers who has been training all their life. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The physical, I was like, yeah, I'm very old at them. They're great. Mm-hmm. I hope that I'm still an aspiring dancer. I'm trying, but maybe I'm too old to do it. But I still, it'll be great if I can dance like that. But also there's like a part, there's a point when I have to kind of like reconcile with my feeling and say like what I want and what I feel the pressure. If I keep calling myself a dancer and choreographer, then there is a sense of pressure. Mm-hmm. Nobody is giving me the pressure. It's an internal pressure that says I have to be like that, you know, those dancers. Sometimes I'm just like, I need to just like cut that all out and say that whatever I'm doing is dance and performance. Mm-hmm. So I have to self-therapy on it. I think I'm interested in expanding the idea definition of what performance is. I'm also interested in expanding the definition of what dance is. And that kind of conversation has been happening historically for the last 20-something years, even 50-something years already in the field. But just because there is a conversation out there, that doesn't mean that that conversation is permeated into what we think mm-hmm. about dance and performance is. So I have to keep bringing back the conversation for my own self. I can also talk about this past work. I was thinking about setting specific choreography, setting the quality of set choreographed movements and the quality of improvised movement and quality of movement that is almost natural, but not really natural because you're being watched by 50 something people. So there are different kinds of performative qualities that I'm interested in. So I use some dance trope that makes us feel like I'm accomplishing something because I'm displaying what I can do quality to, oh, I have to really think about what I'm doing quality, you know? So I'm not really distinguishing those things. I'm just being pulling from all these different kinds.
I see.
Yeah.
That just made me wonder what considerations you make regarding sound during your performance. Like, what is your process for thinking about the way your performances will sound to an audience?
This performance, we don't have any recorded sound. Some people asked for it, and I said no. I was more interested in the sound that the physical body is making. So some people are singing, some people are speaking, some people are stomping, some people... So there's like a sound that coming out of our actions and also our own ourselves is part of the choreography. I was interested in that part. But when I do theatrical work, like the one that's coming up, there is a sound. I don't know, this sounds so selfish, but I use sound for the performers to get into the mood or get into the state that I want us to be in. And I think there is a beautiful connection. That's how I'm connecting the sound to the performance, the material performing. And I kind of tell myself that that's kind of enough for the viewer to mm-hmm. have the relationship. But I'm not really good at dancing with the sound.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even the absence of sound, like the choice to not include, to not have, you know, to create silence or space is also a choice that's interesting.
It's true. It's true. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I find that interesting that you say that it's harder for you to work with sound because it's like the opposite from like what I'm used to. You know, it's like with dance, it's like the music is what you are trying to portray and your movements are just in addition to that and being able to mm-hmm. portray that emotion. So it's interesting to hear you say the opposite.
Yeah. But isn't that satisfying though? Dancing with the music mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, it is, especially like, you know, when there's like certain sounds that are meant to like be like a drop or like a supposed to give you more power, and so I find that really interesting.
There is something beautiful about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I can do that, but I maybe I need to take more dance classes.
Is it just the like combination of having to do like, you know, choreography to the beat or the music, or is it something else for you that makes it harder?
I mean, maybe because I'm not trained in that way. But there is, I mean, you know what? There are some moments of some people's choreography in this work that I made them listen and sing a song in their head and then dance with it. Mm-hmm. There is a thing I did. Mm-hmm. That's quite, it's like they're just dancing in a club kind of feel to it. It's great. I don't know. I think when it has a very beautiful connection, like music and dance, and there's a huge history behind it, and it's very satisfying, but I kind of want to, I mean, this is the work that European dancers were doing in the 90s, but they're separating and say, can we actually look at what music is, and can we actually look at dances? Like, are there, that doesn't have to be a codependent relationship. Mm-hmm. So if we actually separate and look at those two things in the most critical level, then that combination can be more satisfying rather than status quo and say, oh yeah, there's no dance without music. You know what I mean? It's like, let's separate that together and look at them first, then have more further meaningful relationship, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, it's like, in my brain, like I don't know how to explain it, but I understand what you're saying.
It's like a personal relationship. This couple always act together, but like, can we actually look at those two people as a person and oh, that's why those two are really getting along together, mm-hmm. because those two, you know what I mean?
Nicole, you have any?
I'm curious about like challenges that you run into when creating, or maybe when working with people and like trying to portray that vision you have. Like, what are some of those struggles that you have, whether it's with yourself or when working with others?
I don't really have strong vision usually in my work. I kind of have a loose vision and also who I want to work with, and that's how I start. So when I conceive a project in the very beginning, it looks very different. What I see in that at that time is very different from when I, the actual performance that I, or actual work that I created. And I think that's true to a lot of artists, I think. But so in terms of vision, I don't really have much of a challenge. I guess the challenge is just listening to other people and how that I have to be the decision maker for like saying yes or no to those things. This project, the biggest project was my own movement. Because each person has a solo performance that they 15 to 18 minutes solo that they presented at the museum. So I was involved in every single solos that each person was creating. And I got to be the choreographer and also a supporter, because they also made their own work too. They incorporated what they wanted in the work too. The challenge was because I was performing too, so I have to have my own solo, and I didn't have Staka to look at it. So that was a challenge. I think the biggest challenge was me motivating myself to even work on it, because I was more interested in other people's work than my own. that was the first big problem. I will work on it and then videotape myself, but looking through the video doesn't really do, it didn't give me much. So even if I give myself some notes, it doesn't, it's just my solo is very different. It was developed in a very different way than other solos. It's not really visible from the viewers, but for my own self, that was hard. And I just needed another Taka to look at it. That was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you normally performing in your own work, or do you sometimes participate strictly as choreographer, or also, you know, how do you decide whether or not you perform in one or not?
Oh, good question. Usually I perform in it. I think I didn't perform maybe two pieces in the past, in the last decade and a little bit that I've been making work. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I can't. I think I will look for the concepts. If the concept is very personal to me, then I will work on, I will be in it. If the concept has sense of social experimentation, then I have to be in it, so that I am not the lab person using guinea pigs, you know. I need to be the guinea pigs too, you know. That feels like an ethical way to work in it. But if the work is about another community of people that I don't necessarily belong to, then I put myself out of it. So it depends on the concept of it, and if that makes sense for me to be in it. Maybe that's how I make a decision. Thank you for that. Yeah, interesting.
Taka, do you ever get commissioned to choreograph somebody else's project, like a film or performance or some kind of thing like that?
Oh, no.
No?
Yeah, if somebody asks me that, I usually question it and say, I don't know if I'm the right person.
I see.
Or, I mean, if they have a reason why they are asking me, great. But if they are looking at me and say, oh, you do dance, can you do this? And I was like, I don't think I'm the right person. Like, tell me exactly why you're choosing me. you know, like I'm just a one person out of thousands of people out there. I really need to be, it has to make sense that I'm the one who does it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, because I have that criteria, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I usually don't, asked. Also, my work isn't that beautiful, you know. I mean, it is beautiful for me, but it's not beautiful in the objective, you know. Like, I can't, I'm not good at producing beautiful things.
Hmm.
That's hard. For me, it's beautiful to look at, but
yeah.
Yeah,
you know. There's different kinds of beauty, and I'm really attracted to conceptual beauty in artwork. Mm-hmm. Like, if the idea is beautiful, then like what the result of the idea is usually beautiful to me. Or beauty is maybe not the right. Carol Fletcher, my grad advisor, would refer to it as like poetry. Like, there's something poetic happening.
Mm-hmm.
Is like what the beauty might mean. It might not be beautiful in the way we think of it, but I don't know. I think your work's beautiful.
Right. Thank you. But you know, like the music videos and stuff. It's like, right. This music is already beautiful. Why am I gonna you know? It's like, I think it needs to work with somebody who knows how to work with what's already there, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not, unless I'm really invested in that piece. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time. Nicole, do you want to toss in our final question, and then we'll give you a chance to plug your work or whatever, as you like. Go for it, Nicole.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure.
We always like to ask for students, youth who are looking to be artists or maybe looking to be performative artists, what advice do you have for them?
I think be curious. I already talked about this. Yeah, be curious about everything. I mean, I'm also a very I have no boundaries, so I in art. So I am curious about poetry and music, theater. I just went to theater show the other day. That was great. Dance. I don't only look at the work that applies to me. I'm interested in artistic expression and even non-artistic expression in the larger sense, and be curious about it and expose myself to as much as possible. But also here's advice that I'm telling myself recently. Be curious, and be curious about everything is great, but don't beat yourself up if you can't see everything. It's okay. It's okay. There's like a little bit of FOMO also in there, and I just need to like, nah. It's okay if you missed it. That's fine. Because all the other stuff comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like a contradictory advice, but be curious, but also don't be too hard on yourself if you can't see everything. And also take care of yourself. Maybe, yeah.
Mm.
Wow, that's like advice for myself. Thank you.
Excellent advice.
And then do you have any upcoming shows that you'd like to plug, social media that you want to plug, anything that you can tell us about you that we can find online?
My new piece in person. Yes, my new piece is coming up at Pika this September. This work is called Nothing Being. It's a performance with three performers. It's me and my friend Anna Martin Whitehead, who lives in Chicago, and David Thompson, who live in New York. So it's a cross-geographical, cross-cultural collaboration that we are doing on the theme of nothingness and being. So that'll be exciting. I still don't know what it looked like yet, We have another rehearsal coming up to finish it, but that's coming up in September. Yeah, thank you for asking.
And then was there anything else or just that?
My website? It's just myname.com. It's, yeah, takahiroyamamoto.com. That's where you can find that. Yeah. And also there is a book. We made a book for the Opacity Performance Project at the museum. That's still available if you're curious. Yes, it's a beautiful book.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Taka. It's been a real pleasure. What an excellent conversation.
That was my question.
No, thank you so much for having me. Very nice questions. Thank you.
You've been listening to Art Talk Bus Stop. Tune in the fourth Wednesday of every month on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.